Hello world, this is Stephen Francis, and you're listening to the Humble and Honest Podcast. This is episode 2 of this 2-episode release of the Humble and Honest Podcast. If you are new or just hopping on, I highly encourage you to check out the first episode with Davey Blackburn. I promise it is a powerful conversation. Today's conversation is going to be just as much of a powerhouse because I am joined by Natalie Runyon. Natalie is a pastor's kid turned pastor. She lives in Colorado Springs alongside her husband and daughters, and she serves as not only a creative arts pastor, but also a woman's pastor. Natalie is most famous for starting something known as Raise to Stay, a social platform where individuals can find encouragement and also share the realities of church hurt and how they can overcome and continue to be a part of the body of Christ, despite sometimes of the ways that someone can get hurt along that process. I wanted to have a conversation with Natalie because I have walked through my own personal church hurt. And now that I am a pastor, especially in New York City, I'm constantly hearing about the church hurt of others. And I want to be sure that I am someone who is not becoming a part of the problem. How do we heal? How do we overcome? How do we create a better future for the church overall? Me and Natalie talk all about it. So without further ado, here is my conversation with Natalie Runyon. Natalie Runyon, thank you so much for being on the Humble and Honest Podcast today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Listen, Natalie, you have been doing incredible work. You have been doing healing work that has ripple effects all over the country where I am in New York City. And I cannot wait to talk with you about all of it, but I think the best way we can start is with this simple but yet complicated question. Who is Natalie Runyon and how did she get to the platform she's on today?
I'm just a girl who was raised in the church and believed desperately that God had a plan for my life that I trusted would unfold at some point. And I tried a little bit of everything. I tried being a teacher. I tried being a personal trainer. I tried doing all of these different things that I loved doing, that I enjoyed doing in the name of ministry, in the name of God. And I didn't want to be in ministry. I was a pastor's kid. And a lot of being in that church, growing up in that church, was hurtful. There were things that made me not want to go into ministry. And so I tried a little bit of everything. And in that, the Lord hunted me down. And he found me in a space where I was vulnerable and also willing to try again. And so over the last 20 years, I've been in full-time ministry as a worship leader, as a worship pastor, as a women's pastor. And it was through watching my own friends struggle with their faith that I was able to come to this place where even in my own struggles, I didn't want to quit. And that's been my journey over the last 5 years with Raise to Stay, has been showing up on this Instagram space, just trying to encourage people not to give up and not to quit. And to, if they can't stay in a church, to at least stay with Jesus. And that's what I hope the ministry that God has entrusted to me after all these years of trying not to be in ministry, I hope that's what it is showing to the church and faith community.
I do want to ask this as well, because you are speaking to a demographic of people that is very large. It's not lost on me that we have some of the largest, most successful churches in the world currently happening. Yet at the same time, the church is also in what feels like irreversible decline as well. So there's some type of disparity that is happening between large, successful, popular churches and people that are walking away from faith or no longer see the church as a means by which that they can continue to have faith. And some people may look at some of the documentaries that have come out recently. There were two Hillsong documentaries, and there was even the Rise and Fall of Mars Hill, which was audio only. For you, do you feel like those particular works were helpful or hurtful in any way to the cause of having people kind of deconstruct and reconstruct faith? Because while I feel like you are in a similar sense of trying to be honest about things that are happening, I would say you also have a clear redemptive arc. And some of these may be more debatable as to what their actual intent is with what they're trying to communicate.
Yeah. First of all, I would just preface all of this by saying that a large church doesn't equal a healthy church. So just because a church is large and successful doesn't necessarily mean leadership is healthy or the church is healthy. Part of the reason that you'll hear the raspiness in my voice is because I travel around the world right now speaking to churches. And I want to say just really quickly here that there are a lot of really good things happening in the church right now. There is a lot of good work, good fruit that is coming from the global church, not just American church, but global church. There is good and holy work being done by healthy leaders. And a lot of those churches are small mom and pop type churches that are being led by four people who have a robust volunteer team. And they may not be successful in American church culture standards, but they're healthy. And that's what I want to encourage us all in right now is that there are good, healthy churches out there. With these documentaries, I think what it has done is it has validated the voice of victims. And we have to understand that there has been church abuse happening, and it has been at the hands of really trusted leaders. And it's not just in the documentaries that are out, but it's in small churches all over the world that have remained hidden. And churches have aided and abetted abusers simply because they're talented. And so what these documentaries have done is it has shed some light on some situations that may be sensationalized for television, may be sensationalized for views, but it has given voice to the victims. And I think we have to look at the hashtag church too, hashtag me too, and realize that these weren't just sheep crying wolf. There really were wolves in sheep's clothing. So I believe that the good part about the documentary, Shiny Happy People, a lot of them, these documentaries have at least given voice to victims. And I want to say that's a good thing. However, the flip side of that is that we have now created secondhand church hurt, which means that when people fixate on the documentaries, even if they personally weren't hurt, even if they've never been hurt by the church, now they're going into the church expecting to be hurt, which means we are fighting an uphill battle as leaders. And we have a generation who kind of runs to those documentaries like moths to a flame. And now we have to be prepared to shepherd them coming in with secondhand church hurt. And just like I can sit next to a smoker at a bar and get lung cancer if I sat there too long, we can sit next to people who are angry at the church, bitter at the church because of their abuse, and we can become secondhand affected by that. So I believe the documentaries have served good purposes in giving voice to victims. However, I also think that if you listen too carefully and you absorb everything as truth, it could cause a bad taste in your mouth for a church. And we don't want those documentaries to affect people in that way. So I think we can be honoring and honest at the same time.
I think that's a really good point. There is a tension there because while there is a level of accountability and exposing what is going on and hearing the stories of people, because these are real stories and they shouldn't be silenced, I do think trauma bonding is also something that we need to be careful about. Or sometimes it's not even trauma bonding. Sometimes it's almost like I was looking for an excuse to not step in to church, and this is now being used as a justification to not do that. So I think there's a really good tension here that you're exposing. There's also a tension in church where if it's toxic, someone wants to leave peacefully. But then also, one may say if the church is toxic, you should be a whistleblower as to what happened. And maybe not whistleblower, but maybe you should be honest about what it was that happened there that made you want to leave. How do you manage that tension? Because I think there's a lot of people who are just like, listen, I did not like what happened here, but I can't deny that God also did something here. And I don't want to hinder what God can do. And I also don't feel like the things that I endured should be tolerated either. And I'll be honest, I was in a space like that for some time. And sometimes I get people that say, Stephen, you should have said more, you should have exposed it. But then I also feel like, no, I had incredible moments and great relationships, and I don't want to dishonor that either. So I don't know, how did you navigate that? Because you were in a somewhat similar situation yourself.
It's the $1 million question, honestly. And here's the deal. When I look at the early church in Acts, there is a scripture in there in Acts 2 where everybody's freaking out because out of the 120 in the upper room, the Holy Spirit has fallen. There's 120, but out of that 120, a few of them are saying, whoa, they're drunk. They're not believing what's happening. And what I love about that scripture is it says that Peter stands up, and you got to love Peter. And it says with the backing of the other 11, he confronts the 120 and says, no, according to the prophet Joel, this is exactly how it's supposed to go down. But the thing that I want to really emphasize here is it says that Peter stands up with the backing of the other 11, which tells us that he had the support of his friends. When you're in a church setting and there is stuff happening and people are all in a muck and there's division and there's gossip and there's tension in the maybe the leadership or there's toxicity, there usually is one person who's willing to be the tribune, to go to leadership and say, this isn't good. This isn't how we should be operating. This isn't biblical. But what ends up happening is that one person looks behind them and there's nobody with them. They've sent this person in to be the ramrock, to be the Esther of the moment. And then when they turn around, nobody's there to back them. And that person ends up getting fired or they end up getting labeled as divisive or whatever. And I say this all the time, that most of our church staff would rather quit than contend for healthy culture, because they go in as like the one leading the charge to a healthy church. And then the next thing they know, they find themselves on probation, being demoted or worse, fired. So we can't blame people for not using their voices if the rest of the church isn't going to stand up and say, we're in agreement. However, I've also learned that I can go to HR and I can have a very valid reason for why I'm going to HR or going to leadership. And I am the one who ends up having to walk, because sometimes you do just got to let it burn. And that was some of the greatest advice I ever received from a mentor, was we aren't responsible for saving the church. And if there is unhealthy leadership, if there is toxic environment and everybody's willing just to sit in it, then we have to decide, am I called to contend for this healthy culture, or is God giving me permission to go? And I wrote in a post today, sometimes we have to leave to stay. Sometimes we have to leave a church to stay with Jesus. And there is nothing wrong with just finally drawing a line in the sand and saying, look, no change is going to come. No, I'm not going to go in and risk my own spiritual and physical and emotional health if nobody else is going to join me and help me change and shift culture. And that's a really hard decision. And you and I have both lived it, where you're either called to contend or you're called to go. And both, Jesus will be in both.
Yeah. You're hitting the nail on the head here. I think there's this also this battle that we have to have, right? Where there's a sense of there is a toxic leader that is at play, and there needs to be a sense of, all right, we need to confront what is going on with this leader. But that's also a little bit more complicated if it's not just the leader, but the system that the church is operating in that is also toxic. Where there's a level of, we're going to turn a blind eye toward this. And I come from charismatic circles where there was this high honor culture. You don't speak ill of the pastor's done so much. So you better not try to step into it. Otherwise, you get all of those verses on touch not my anointed and all that other type of stuff. So then there's a level of, okay, maybe it's better for me to go. But then again, there's still the tension of people are like, why did you leave? And you don't want to lie. Talk to me a little bit more about your situation, because you were out of church for quite some time. And I've heard from other conversations how you even had the opportunity to come back into the space that hurt you and was able to be on that stage. And while there was still some pain, there was much healing that happened. Can you walk me through a little bit more in detail your journey with some of that? Because I think that's like really important for people to hear. That is, listen, it wasn't clean cut. It was actually quite messy. But at the same time, here's the result at the end of it.
Absolutely. And I want to remind all of us that there is a massive difference between being in a church that is unhealthy and being in an abusive church. And I think that we need to clarify that for our listeners, because I do believe that there is an opportunity for us when we've been wounded for the Lord to make that right and for us to be able to go back in and to have redemptive experiences. However, I would never tell somebody who has been like sexually abused or physically abused to go back into that. For in my situation specifically, I was a senior in high school when one day as the pastors, we walked in and we were just told, you're done. Now, being 18 years old and that being a formative year for me, I'm going to a Christian college. I want to go into ministry. My entire life changed that day when we were forced out of the church parsonage and basically homeless at the hands of the church. And that was traumatic. That was something that left me wondering, can you trust the church? Can you trust people? And I would go on a 5 to 6 year journey of detangling from some of this religion that I had been under and some of this unhealthy leadership to decide, do I love God's people? Do I even love Jesus? Do I even believe what my family has been teaching me? And thankfully, yes, I did. And I grew from that. But then 5 years ago, I get a call from this church where we had been hurt and the new pastors had been in my youth group at that time. And they asked me to come lead worship for the 100 year anniversary. And of course I was like, no, I've had therapy and counseling and there's been medication. I'm not going back into that. But the Lord really gave me peace. And I get a lot of flack for that being charismatic, Pentecostal. How did you know God gave you peace? I wanted to go. There was something in me that even though I was scared, I trusted that this invitation meant something. And so when I got there and I walked in and I see all these people who have been active participants in our hurt, not our abuse, but in the hurt, the disappointment, there was this moment that I had a choice to either seek the one who can heal or to stay bitter. And as I led worship that day for that 100 year anniversary and began to hug people that I thought were part of my betrayal, the Lord reminded me that they were just as congregants, clueless as I was. And that what I could have seen as an exile, the Lord was using as an exodus. And what's crazy is we live now in that same city where we were hurt. We just moved back. And my parents are actually going to that church and mentoring the pastors of that church. And what's so cool about it is that so many times we quit before the miracle. And this is a 35-year journey. This is 35 years later that we are back in that sanctuary doing things with those same people. And it's because the Lord invited us into a space of healing. And not everybody will have that story, but I'm so grateful it was ours.
Man, that's so powerful. Now you're back in the same city. You have 2 children?
Yes.
Yeah. I'm curious, in light of everything that you've been doing, how do you cover your kids with some of this stuff? Because the worry that I've had, especially as someone who's a pastor, is there'll be times when I'm venting about things that are frustrating and I almost have to be careful about how I'm talking about it around my children because I don't want them to take hold of what I'm saying out of frustration and make that the standard of what church life is. How do you navigate that?
I always joke with people and say, don't ask me to write a parenting book right now because I'm like in the throes of raising an 11 and 14 year old teenage daughters, which is just a whole world in and of itself. But I believe that you're right. Like I grew up in a house where I could hear muffling, I could hear crying, I could hear my parents praying, but they did a fairly good job of insulating me from the nitty-gritty details so that I wouldn't look at people and harbor any type of hard feelings. But I'm like you, when we walked out a pretty hard season of ministry a few years ago, I knew my daughters loved the woman who was really hurting me. They loved her. She was like this cool aunt at the church. And I didn't want my kids to look at her and view her as anything but that. Because at the end of the day, this woman, even though she was my Saul, she was somebody else's Paul. She wasn't all that bad. She just was hurting me. And so it was really important in our household that that woman's image and what reputation wasn't tainted in my kids' minds so that should we leave, should we go, that they wouldn't have that same heaviness that I had to carry. And it's hard because the house is open and everybody can hear, but my husband and I tried to do a good job of maintaining some integrity in that because we don't want our kids to carry the burdens that they haven't been called to carry. The other thing that I'm trying to do really honestly too with my kids is be honest with them about some of the things a church is not doing well. So if we go into a church and they see something, or they're in a youth group and they're uncomfortable, or something is happening, I'm not gaslighting them into thinking it's just them because we know that there is no junior Holy Spirit. So if my kids come to me and they say, I don't think I like the way that person said that, or in youth group this happened, we're going to have the honest conversations while also honoring leadership, being able to say, you're right. That wasn't good. That wasn't the right thing to say. That wasn't the right thing to do. But we're also going to honor and to speak life into people with our children. So I think finding that balance is also good for us. Our kids can teach us a lot in how we navigate some of the sticky situations in church.
What are some ways that you can get an idea of this is a healthy church? There's no such thing as a perfect church. There's a difference between a healthy church and even a hurtful church or a toxic church. There's categories. There's a lot of things to this. But is there anything that you look for?
Well, thankfully, we live in America. So there are churches on every corner, denominations, opportunities. We are not lacking in that. So there is no excuse, in my opinion, for any of us to not find a healthy church because they are out there. However, I have some red flags. And I'll just share some of mine. Number one, I am looking for Bible taught and Bible lived culture and community. So I want the Bible to be preached. I want the Bible alone to be preached. I don't care what translation, what version. I just want to hear the Bible preached and I want it to be theologically accurate. And I don't want a bunch of stories. I don't want a bunch of prosperity gospel nationalism. I don't want that coming from the pulpit, though I think it's really important for us to know what's happening in our world. I want it through the lens of Jesus, not through the lens of a man or a woman. And so I'm looking for that Bible-based teaching. I'm looking for vertical worship. I'm looking for worship that is pointing me to Jesus, not to talent, not to projects, not to celebrities. I really want to see worship that's happening in spirit and in truth in the sanctuary. I want to see kids involved. I want the kids ministry to be thriving, for there to be multi-generational worship happening. I also want to see mission. I want to see what the Judea, the Jerusalem, and the Samaria is to this church. Where are we reaching? What is our city reach? What is our state reach? What is our country reach? And what is our global reach? And how are we being the hands and feet of Jesus? If it's a consumer gospel that is being preached, if it's a prosperity gospel being preached, if they're more worried about the temperature of their coffee in the church than they are about what they're doing for the widow and the orphan, I'm probably not going to remain in that church. But that's because that's important to me, is being out and being the church in the city. So I'm looking for those things. I'm looking for gospel. I'm looking for gospel-based worship and teaching. I'm looking for multi-generational worship, for kids ministry and youth ministry to be a focus. And I'm also really just looking for a mission-minded church that is a great commission-minded and great commandment-led.
Hey world, we're going to go back into this conversation in a moment, but I want to take a quick pause so I can share something with you. The reason why I created this podcast and even decided to come back from my long hiatus to do this 2-episode release was because I wanted to be sure that I had humble and honest conversations that genuinely helped people. There is so much content out there in the world that you could be listening to, and it means so much to me that you would take a moment to listen to this conversation. And I genuinely hope that from listening to it, that it helps you or helps someone that you know in some way. And I would love it if you could do me a favor. Help me by writing a review for this podcast. When you write reviews and you share it on social media, it helps more people get the chance to see it, hear it, and hopefully it could be a help to them as well. So I want to thank you again for listening. And I also want to thank you in advance for taking a moment to write a review or sharing this show with your people. Now, let's get back into it. This conversation with Natalie Runyon. I like all of that. What you're talking about too is not only exactly what the Bible calls us to do, but it also puts those in charge at a higher standard, where it's just, hey, if this is what you're about, this is what I'm going to uphold you to. I do want to ask this since I have your attention. So there was the whole situation with Matt Chandler last year where, and I don't know how familiar you are with it, but I'll just go ahead and give you a quick recap. He seemed what he thought was a fine, just texting with friends relationship. He was challenged on it, brought it before the elders, and then was basically asked to take a sabbatical stood on stage, publicly apologized, took a sabbatical, and then became reinstated a few months later. I've seen mixed reviews about that. I've seen people say, hey, this is like the standard that we should uphold. Like, we know that the leader's here getting things done and that they're holding a higher standard. But at the same time, I've also heard people say, if that's what they'll do to a pastor who literally was texting a friend of his and things got maybe too friendly, I don't know. Nobody knows. That's not actually a motivator. That's actually makes it even more intimidating to be honest about that, because what will you do to me if I actually do have something that is troubling? Do you have any opinion on that? I'm just curious, because again, you're in the line of work where you're hearing all of this and you've seen the pros and cons of it. So
I just want to first off say that I empathize with the Chandlers. This is a crazy world we live in. And being in the spotlight, being in a public arena, and the Christian public arena, is almost scarier than being in a world public arena, because Christians are so quick to pick and choose what sin is based off of their preferences. And technology, social media, it has added an entire new layer of obstacles for leaders, especially innocent ones who are probably thinking they're doing nothing wrong, or maybe nobody's going to find out. I don't know what the situation was, but I know for me that I am always on guard. I am always assuming that somebody is going to take something that I say, do whatever, and run with it to try to destroy something, because that is just the way this world is. If it's not the Christians, it's people who have been hurt by the church. And for me, there are certain roadblocks that I have to jump over. Number one, as a woman, I have to travel with someone constantly. When people call me to come to their church, I travel with an assistant or with one of my family members so that everybody knows where I am 24/7. So nobody can say that I'm not somewhere. Number two, I have male and female alike dropping into my DMs constantly. And it would be really easy to get into a very harmless, innocent conversation with a brother, thinking that I am offering wise counsel and biblical encouragement, and those screenshots be taken and turned into something that they weren't. I don't know the heart and intent behind what happened between Pastor Chandler and this woman, but I do know that it's a slippery slope. And it would be very easy for any of us to get caught up in something that we didn't intend to get caught up in. And I do believe that as leaders, we are held to a higher standard, which is why we have to have safeguards in place and why we have to have things in place to help protect us from these situations that could turn ugly pretty quickly. I also want to say that I love elder boards. I love accountability. I think every pastor should be under high accountability. And I myself have a group of people who hold me accountable. So I will make the maybe innocent assumption that these men had reason for what they did. And that if I was teetering on a slippery slope, I would hope that people loved me enough to have that hard conversation with me to save my marriage, to save my family, and to save our church. I sit in it and feeling both empathy and also very high alert that the enemy is out to kill, steal, and destroy, and he is after the carriers of the gospel first.
I would agree with that 100%. I think the higher the platform that you get, the smaller and smaller your, I don't want to say liberty should be liberty. You should be able to enjoy yourself and all that type of stuff, but you have to be careful. You have to be on guard. And to your point, what can seem, I was just trying to encourage somebody, is now being weaponized against you as something that might have been romantic. And I fully understand that. I live now with this new understanding with different leaders in the perspective of there are very few professions like ministry where you struggling with a particular thing takes away your whole livelihood. If one slip up can make you no longer do the thing that you've dedicated your life to doing. And while that is often severe, it's because the calling is high. Jesus said it. We know it. And you have to be sure that most of the time when those big things happen, it's not like it came out of nowhere, but it was several other things beforehand that kind of gave you steps into that moment. And if we can protect our leaders in a way where it's just, you're not, we're going to be sure you don't take that ultimate fall because we're going to keep you accountable, even in these small things, then praise God for it. That means you have people in your corner. more than people that just want to be like, ah, it's whatever, it's fine. And then at the same time, be the ones to have to kick you off the cliff if you do end up stumbling. Yeah,
it's true. One of the black boxes that gets me in trouble a lot is the one that I write that accountability is not church hurt. That if we're going to hold our senior pastors accountable, then everybody who holds a platform position needs to be held accountable differently. And we have used accountability as ways to hurt people. But for the most part, I would say that good, godly, healthy accountability is what God has called us to. Iron sharpening iron, sitting in that space with each other and not letting us act like a fool because we love each other too much to let them ruin a marriage or ruin a ministry. And so just a reminder for all of us in leadership that accountability when done in love is not church hurt. It might be uncomfortable. It might put us out for a season, but that, like you said, it's a season. And spring will come, but we need to let people love us in the form of kind rebuke.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's lean into that a little bit more, because I do think that there is something that happens amongst churches. And I think this honestly exists in every sphere, but church is an area where it can often be exploited, is the idea of there is a level of excellence and calling up that happens, especially with volunteers. We believe in you, we're championing you, and we want to see you be fulfilled in the gifts that God has given you to, whether it's worship, whether it's leading in some particular way. But oftentimes that's been used as a way of manipulating people. And going back to some of the things that we were mentioning with some of the documentaries that have come out, a lot of them were basically... And I don't know if you watch the documentaries or not. I did watch a couple. And the thing that often was a bit of a frustration was a lot of them were talking about how people were working for free X amount of hours and all that other type of stuff. And me growing up in church, I think that's just church. Like, obviously there's a overabundance, but there's also a level of honesty, man. Like, I grew up with moms and aunts that was at church every single, they didn't get paid a dime, but they was there, they was serving, they was cooking, they was doing something because that was part of it. Do you feel that there is a bit of a line that we need to be careful about? When is the line crossed of level of excellence calling up and now I'm just being used and almost abused in order to serve this church's purposes?
You have to remember, like, our parents' generation, they served the church because that was what they knew to do. They served the church from a heart of service. They have the Mary Martha. You have the Mary Marthas, you know, running around. And I grew up in that same environment where you did what you had to do to get the job done. And you would work several 40 hours a week, maybe a whole work week, getting ready for cantatas or Easter or Christmas. And there was a unity and a camaraderie in that that really unified the church, I believe, in the 80s and 90s that we don't see now, because we have created a consumer culture within the church that demands a couple of things. Number one, we have volunteers who are now not just volunteering because they want to serve the church, but because they're hoping to get a job. They're hoping to have a gift validated. This is why I say the church is not a talent agency, because so many times we'll start, you know, going into churches, expecting the church to serve us, give me a platform, give me opportunity. And when those platforms and opportunities aren't handed to us, now we're church hurt, right? Because the expectation wasn't met or people didn't validate our gifts. So it really goes back to the heart of why we're serving. Why am I volunteering? What am I expecting to get from this? And what am I hoping to give the church? Because the church is not meant to serve us. We're meant to serve the church. So when I look at this, I say, yes, in my experience, I have seen volunteers give so much of their time, talent, and treasure. They are tithe-paying volunteers. They are in there every single week. They are serving in every capacity, and the church isn't paying them. They are there from the kindness of their heart. And I would check in with those volunteers often and say, how are you doing? Are you overwhelmed? Are you exhausted? Are you enjoying this? I need you to tell me where you are in your heart and in your mind, what expectations aren't being met. It was a constant inventory of my volunteers to make sure we weren't taking advantage of them. On the flip side, in other departments, they were just running volunteers ragged. And then there was bitterness. They're just using me. They're just trying to get free work out of me. There was so much that was so confusing because there wasn't this line of communication open between leaders that were paid and leaders who were volunteer. And so my take on this is you better communicate well with your volunteers who are putting in 25 plus hours a week in your ministry, because you want to make sure you're not hurting them. You want to make sure that they're not burning out. You want to make sure they're not paid to be there. I have gone to bat for people before too and said, look, this person's putting in 30 plus hours a week. Let's hire these guys. Like, they're doing good work. They're hard workers. Why are we not paying them? And at least asking the question and letting them know that we're going to bat for them should being on a staff be their hope. So I just think being in constant communication with our volunteers, even more so than our staff, is really important to keep them in a place where they're healthy and also not disappointed by unmet expectations that we're not even aware of.
We had a guy previously on the show that said that oftentimes volunteering for church is becoming furniture, where it's just like you get put in this corner, you serve this purpose, and we expect you to be in this corner serving this purpose for until we decide that we need to do something different. And what if that person wants to do something new, serve in a new way, or even just feels like I need a break? There's often sometimes a level of pressure and disappointment, depending on what church atmosphere that they are a part of, that can make them feel like they can't even speak up. And oftentimes the red flag to me is just like when they start calling out and not saying anything, it's just, okay, something's going on. But oftentimes it almost feels like by that point it's too late. Like the burnout has already happened, and are just the disinterest in moving forward has already occurred. And there just needs to be a level of checking in and caring, because that's what it's all about. That's what it's all about. If I know I am valued, if I know that my being here is more than just we need a service from you, but you are a part of this community, I'm willing to show back up and love and participate and do something that's greater than myself. So I think that's really great. Our time is running out. There's a few things I want to run past you. Obviously, the big thing that we talk about now amongst church culture, whether it's the Liturgist podcast, whether it's some of these other platforms that are out there, is deconstruction. Deconstruction is the big sexy word for a lot of people that are basically coming up with a very unique perspective of Christianity, if you want to still call it that, are walking away from faith entirely. What I think is so powerful about you is you had your time of deconstruction, yet at the same time, it seems like you have come back to what would be considered a conservative, Bible-based theology. So you are in the minority. You actually have deconstructed and reconstructed back to what it's just like, I have an understanding of the Bible now where I'm not throwing the baby out with the bathwater. I'm trusting Jesus, but how I interact with people is different. Tell me what you did.
Church leaders, just first of all, like, we cannot be afraid of this word deconstruction. And we certainly cannot be afraid to have the conversation because the world is having it. So we have to have the conversation. If we don't have it, the world will have it with people and it will not go well. Lisa Bevere, in my foreword of the book, writes that deconstruction with no plan to rebuild is just destruction. And I think at the end of the day, for me, when I went to college, I ended up not going to Christian college. I did not go where I was supposed to go. That's where I had been accepted. I went to a public university, majored in kinesiology, which was a science major, and I fought for my faith for 5 years. I would sit in a big room with 300 people, and professors would just badger me as the one believer in the room, making me defend my faith. And at the end of the day, I didn't deconstruct. I detangled from religion. I detangled from 90s purity culture. I detangled from things that had been put on me that weren't even biblical, but were man's interpretation of different movements and things that had brought shame onto me and condemnation, which are not of the Lord. And so when people tell us they're deconstructing, we don't need to panic. And I say this all the time, that God's people, we don't panic, we prophesy. We begin to prophesy into the spaces where people are starting to believe the lies of the enemy and say, no, we're going to trust that God has them on a journey that's going to bring them closer to him, not further away. And when we have mentors in our lives, like I did, I had good mentors in my life who were walking with me through this. I was still attending church. I wasn't isolated and out of community. I was being honest with my struggles. I wasn't gaslighting myself. I was saying I was really hurt by the church. I was really hurt by people. I don't want that anymore. How do I still walk with Jesus and trust his people again? And I really went through a public journey. I didn't hide it and I wasn't ashamed of it. I journaled. I spent time talking to God, even if I couldn't show up at church on a Sunday morning. And so for me, it was just allowing myself to grieve what had been lost, what had been broken, what had been disillusioned in my mind about the church, but held on to my faith to Jesus. And I think detangling can help us throw off some of that stuff that's keeping us separate from the Lord and his goodness and his love and his kindness, and allows us to embrace his people when we're ready. And we have to remember, guys, healing is not linear. For a lot of people, healing is a journey, and Jesus is not in a rush with us. So we shouldn't be in a rush with each other. So when somebody's saying, I'm deconstructing, don't panic and think they're deconverting. For some people, maybe, but really deconstruction can be a beautiful process for someone to meet a Jesus they've been desperate to know. It just might not be on our timeline. And so that can be a really powerful journey for us to walk somebody through.
I think that word change is so great. Not deconstructing, but detangling, because that gives the picture you need to understand what the journey is. You're just trying to take out the things that you know shouldn't be there, or you're trying to figure out should be there in the hopes of having what ultimately is important and of high value there. With everything that we've talked about, much of what you're sharing has been expressed in your book, has been expressed in your podcast. I've eaten every episode, by the way. Is there another season coming?
There is. Yes. We are in the process of recording now, so it will be coming.
Beautiful. Beautiful. Can't wait. What's your favorite conversation from the podcast? I'm curious. What's one that sticks out in your mind?
I really love talking to my friends, Jocelyn and John Brockman, about when to know when it's time to go. They really talked a lot about righteous frustration, holy like anger, like this part of you that just becomes so discontent, not just with a person or a situation, but just knowing that holy burr in the saddle when you're like, okay, it's time to go. That was a really helpful conversation, I think, for a lot of people who were wrestling with, is it okay that I'm feeling a little tension here? And I really loved my conversation with Sharon Hottie Miller about control and about that cost of control that we try to have in our lives, with our marriages, with our finances, with our ministries, because I think we as ministry people do wrestle with control, which goes back to the garden, obviously. And so those two conversations for me. And then I love being on podcast because it challenges me to really look even at the things that I wrote in my book and say, if I could write that different, how would I have written that? Or if I could add anything to it, which I think was one of your questions, what would I have added to it? So yeah, being on the podcast and having a podcast has really brought me into community with the church, which I love.
Let's lean into that thing that you just mentioned. You wrote a beautiful book. I have a copy. I want to recommend everybody listening get a copy of the book. Now that the book has been out, is there anything that you would add as an addendum or just like an extension to what you've written so far? Because it's a great book, but obviously this is an evolving conversation. When you look back on the book, is there anything you would like to add?
I wrote the draft in 2021 and 2022, which, you know, seems like just yesterday, but it's a lot's happened in the evangelical deconstruction movement since that. I think when I look back at reviews, and yes, I read all the reviews because I think as a first-time author, you should hear the good and the bad of what you've written. A lot of the constructive feedback was, I wish there was more how-to. I wish there was more advice that you could have given us that was practical. And I receive that construction criticism. At the same time, it scares me to be the voice telling people when they should go, when they should stay. There's a heavy responsibility with the written word. And so I think in my next book that will come out next year, which I can't tell the title to yet, but it will be a little bit of kind of an extension of Raised to Stay, if you will, that will really challenge the church and some of the areas that Raised to Stay challenges the church with more practical conversation for us all to hopefully grab hold of and run with in our teams, with our staff, to develop this healthy culture we're all desperate to have.
I'm sure that there's a level of, hey, listen, there's not like an exact formula.
Yeah.
What may work for me, what was necessary for me, may be actually harmful for you. But at the same time, I guess there is a level of, here's some guidelines, here's some signs, some tips to help you in your decision making. So I cannot wait to receive that. But with the time that we have left, how do we keep up with Natalie Runyon?
Our Raised to Stay Instagram community is thriving. That's really where we have a lot of the honest conversations in the comment sections. I do run my own account. I answer DMs when I can, but there's about 126,000 of us over there. So it's definitely a really sweet community of people who are like, look, I don't know what the church is doing, but I want to stay with Jesus. And so that's a sweet space. Facebook under Natalie Runyon, as well as a private group, Raised to Stay. And I do have a subscription that you can go to at natalierunyon.com or Raised to Stay. Stay.com and subscribe there to get some special free stuff and to be part of the email community.
Natalie Runyon, thank you so much for this conversation.
Thank you.
Okay.
And there you have it, my conversation with Natalie Runyon. Natalie, thank you so much for this conversation. I truly not only feel encouraged, but I also feel challenged in many ways. And I hope all of you listening check out all of the resources, including her new book that just came out. I truly believe it will be a blessing to you. And I also made sure that it was easy for you to find because I put all of that in the show notes of today's episode. I want to thank all of you for listening. It means so much that you guys took time to check out this episode, whether you're coming back to the podcast after its long hiatus or you're checking it out for the first time. Like I mentioned before, this was just a 2-episode special release. But I want to encourage all of you guys, especially those that are listening for the first time, to check out some of the previous episodes that are on the Humble and Honest podcast. There are truly some timeless conversations that I believe will both encourage and challenge you in some unique ways in how you see the world. And trust and believe, there is also new things on the horizon here on the Humble and Honest podcast.